Thank you. I'm Laurie. I'm a compulsive overeater. That was a wonderful talk, and I really appreciate it very much. I'm going to do a little bit of qualification, but my gratitude is for the steps, and I will, following Penny, talk specifically about the parts of the steps that I'm particularly grateful for. But gratitude is behind the beginning of my recovery from relapse, 7 years of relapse. I joined the fellowship in 1986. February the 11th of 1986 was my first meeting. And I joined because after having got rid of all the stresses in my life and having every opportunity to stay in good physical shape, I was gaining even more weight than I had ever lost. I was heavier than I had ever been after being a three-time, a lifetime member of a particular weigh and pay plan. And I was visited by, and my wife was just pushing me, worrying about me. I have in my family diabetes on three out of four grandparents and my mother. It is a hidden killer, and it killed my mother. It killed my grandmother before their time and my grandfather. And I was on my way there. And a friend of ours who had been in AA had been truly a gutter drunk, literally a gutter drunk, picked up out of a gutter on Main Street in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, which is our sort of sad street, picked up by some AA people and brought to a life that he had never known. And he told me all of his stories, and he introduced me to all of his friends who had been literal gutter drunks. And their recovery was amazing. Just as an example, my friend, to get out of the gutter, had to establish some kind of business. In his sobriety, he ran a bartending school, and he didn't drink. He taught people how to mix drinks. He had liquor around him, and he didn't drink. And I wanted the serenity and the wisdom that these people had, but I've never been addicted to alcohol. I have no problems with it. I can't drink right now. I can't drink more than a quarter to half a glass of beer before my body just rejects it. So I don't have it very much at all. So I wanted what he had. I wanted what they all had, but I didn't qualify for AA. And he had left town, and he visited me around the time I'd gotten rid of all these stresses and I was gaining even more weight. And I said, oh, God, I'm going to have to go back to my weigh and pay plan. And he said, well, why don't you try OA? And I said, what's that? And he said, Overeat is Anonymous. I said, what's that? He said, it's like Alcoholics Anonymous, except it's for food. And then I assume that some people have heard this already, but I made this joke. I said, never in my life have I ever had a business appointment for a Thursday, eaten a donut on a Wednesday, and woke up in a hotel room on a Friday, not knowing where I had been. Those were the stories that all of his friends had told me. And he didn't laugh. And he said, if you don't take your food as seriously as I take my alcohol, you're going to die. And I think he saved me 150 pounds. I mean, I had stopped weighing myself way before I joined OA. So I don't know how much I came into this fellowship with, but I've lost between 65 and 90 pounds. I just don't know how much. And I think he saved me 150 pounds because I don't think I would have been on my knees without his telling me that, without getting to the 300 to 400 pound weight. So I went to my first meeting and I found a sponsor right away, and I relapsed. I went in and out of relapse. I worked the steps and relapsed, worked the steps and relapsed for about 7 years. One day I was at a strong meeting, a meeting where people kept saying to me, how are you, Laurie? And I'd say, fine. And they say, great. Just, you know, keep coming back. Yeah, love to hear you talk. You talk so nicely. And this woman came up, the shyest woman in the room came up to me and said, how are you, Laurie? And I said, fine. And she came within about, you know, that this close to me and said, I mean, really? And I just, I'll never forget that moment, although I sure wish I knew what date it was. I know approximately. I know where I was standing. I remember it was just before the meeting. I remember her face. And I said, I'm in terrible shape. I need help. And for the next couple of months, She worked with me every day. I made gratitude lists. That was one of the things I did. So that's why I had a list of gratitudes, and I was sort of getting going. I was asked to sponsor a person who had been in AA, sober in AA for 15 years. And I recognized what an opportunity I had. He had studied the big book, and that was basically what we had in those days. I said, well, why don't we help each other out? You'll tell me what you know about the directions in the big book, and I'll tell you what I know about OA. And from about May of 1993, so May 1st of 1993 is the date that I consider that I got abstinent and that I recovered from compulsive eating, in the sense that for approximately 29 and a half years, I have not been tempted to go back to that which I have abstained from. And that is, for me, a miracle. To have ice cream available, it's in my freezer right now. As a matter of fact, it's made by a person who was trained as an ice cream maker for 20 years or 10 years. Everything's the greatest ice cream in the world. I've never had it. I never will have it. I'll never want it, God willing. So that sense of miracle is what I don't always hear in a way. I hear the spiritual, I hear the emotional, but I don't hear people saying to newcomers, as much as I think we should be saying to newcomers, what we can offer you is freedom from compulsive eating, freedom from your addiction, not a spiritual happiness or emotional calm, but literally freedom from the addiction that keeps sending you back to that which you know you should abstain from. That's the miracle. So I'm very grateful in general for what the steps have given me. Now I want to go through each step and talk in particular about what I'm grateful for in each step as it relates to OA. I too, like Penny, use the big book, but I am quite convinced, because I have many, many friends in this fellowship whom I revere, who are to me idols and icons of spirituality and abstinence, that are just unbelievable, have suffered so much more than I have overcome so much more than I have worked so much harder than I do. They're just amazing people, and they don't work the big book, or they'll read it, but they don't use the directions the way I've been taught the directions are. I like the directions, but I want to just talk about what I'm grateful for. The first thing I'm grateful for in step one is that, and it took me 7 years to accept this, is the concept from the big book that there is something, and it's found in our OA 12 and 12, that there is something different between uncontrollable cravings and a mental obsession that sends us back to that which causes those cravings. That those are two distinct ideas. And the first is that there are some things I have to abstain from because they cause me uncontrollable cravings, or have in the past caused me uncontrollable cravings. The kinds of cravings where if I'm eating something, I've got the food coming to my mouth and I'm saying, I got to stop. The next bite will be the last one, and it's not the last one. And the thing about OA, as opposed to most other 12-step fellowships, is that it's a combination of behaviors, as Gamblers Anonymous, Codependents Anonymous, Al-Anon, Shopaholics, Debtors Anonymous, behaviors, and single substances, Alcoholics Anonymous, Cocaine Anonymous, Crystal Meth Anonymous, and Syria, combinations of substances. Narcotics Anonymous is the best example. We're on the spectrum, and some of us might have behaviors only, bulimia, anorexia, just binging. Some of us might have single substances, sugar, fat, whatever. And some of us, maybe even most of us, but certainly I am, a combination of behaviors and ingredients and mixtures of ingredients and single substances that I have to abstain from. The freedom that this gives is also one of the curses of OA, which is that we have to figure it out. And it's hard. You know, you go to some of these other fellowships, and it's obvious what you have to abstain from. It's not so obvious for each one of us, because I can eat things you can't eat, and you can eat things I can't eat. And so I'm grateful for that, because that was my first mistake in relapse. I did not accept the idea that my body was different. I wanted to believe what my first sponsor had told me and what every other diet I'd ever been on had told me, which was that once I lost my weight, I could eat anything in moderation. And my first sponsor said to me, and it worked for him because he had only behaviors, once I worked the steps and lost my weight, I could go back to having a little bit of dessert, a little bit of deep fried foods and things of that sort, because I would only want to eat them in moderation. And for some people, that's true, but it's not true for me. And so the main reason for my relapse was that I did not accept what the big book says we must accept, that our bodies are different from other people, that we have an abnormal reaction to certain behaviors and certain substances and certain combinations of substances. So I'm very grateful for that lesson. I am grateful in step two. Well, and I'm grateful for, I'm sorry, I should say in step one, I'm also grateful for the notion that the unmanageability of my life is really in relation to food. That it is in relation to the concept. When I came into OA, the only thing wrong with my life was the food. I was happily married, wonderful kids, financial security, no stress in my job, but I was eating like a pig and I couldn't stop. And I was really causing danger to my body. So the unmanageability related to my inability to keep from temptation. I had all kinds of reasons for going back to that which I knew I could not eat. I mean, in my heart, I knew it. I didn't want to accept the fact that I couldn't eat it, but I had every reason, ranging from deep emotional feelings, and not much has happened to me in my life, but I'm very, very sensitive. So from deep emotional feelings to I'm standing up so it doesn't count, or they made it for me, or it's going to waste, or it's free, or it's natural. So these reasons, that brilliance of that, that's what the steps get rid of, is those stupid reasons. That's the brilliance, I think, of the doctor's opinion and of the big book, is that concept that that's what the steps deal with. We'll never get rid of the abnormality of the body, but we'll never want to go back, if we work the steps, to that which causes, to which our abnormality of the body is sensitive. In step two, my greatest gratitude is the opening that was given by these early Christians, these Oxford Group people, and all these people who were basically Protestants, the opening that they gave to people like me. I am a third generation agnostic. I don't believe in God, but I know I can't prove that I'm right. And I've never believed in a God. My father and mother never believed in a God, and my grandfather and grandmother never believed in a God. My grandfather and grandmother rejected the Orthodox Jewish teachings of their parents. And so I grew up in a household in which there was no God, and that didn't stop us from being deeply moral people. As a matter of fact, we were deeply moral people. I grew up with very deep morality. What I loved is what the big book said my problem was. The big book says I do believe in something, and it's true. I believe in things I cannot justify, truth and love and justice and beauty, all kinds of things that other people might give other names to, like joy or harmony or something like that, or creativity. But whatever it is that I believe in, I can't justify it logically in the same way other people of my friends can't justify their idea of God. It's just what you believe in. And what the big book says is my problem is I'm blocked off from what I believe in. And that the direction that I'm getting is as if I have a compass that's pointing in the direction of truth, love, justice, and beauty, true north or magnetic north, whatever the scientific name of it is. But I'm, in my addiction, going 180 degrees backwards, you know, 180 degrees behind, away from what I deeply believe in. And even in my best moments, I'm at 45 degrees or it's equivalent on the other side, 275 or whatever. And that notion that I can get direction from my higher power, which is my deepest values, by unblocking the pipeline between what I deeply believe in my heart and how I think and act in my head, that's the pipeline that has to be unblocked. And that's what the steps do, steps 4 through 9 do, was mind-blowing to me when I realized, yes, if I can live in harmony with what I deeply believe in, I will be sane. And once I'm sane, I'm not going to want, I'm going to look at the stuff that I know is poison to me and say, why would I indulge in it? It's poison to me. And it, and keeping that sanity is the most important thing in my life, which is keeping the direction, my, getting my directions from my higher power. The direction I'm getting is like a compass. I'm being pulled towards what I deeply believe in, but other people are pushed by their scriptures or by their sense of what God wants them to do, a more divine intervention kind of God, it doesn't matter. The point is that whatever we believe in deeply, whatever we want to be or we have is at the core of our being is blocked off from who we are when we're living in our addiction. I'm grateful in step three for the notion that my problem is that I want to be in charge of everything. And that it can be for the best motives, that the word selfish in the big book doesn't mean wanting things so I'll be happy. Because, you know, I grew up Jewish in the 50s and the Holocaust, even though no one in my family suffered from it. But the Holocaust weighed upon Jews. And, well, it still does, but certainly in the 50s, it was so you know, of recent memory. And I didn't want it to have occurred. Well, that's not a selfish feeling. I don't want people to suffer now in this world, suffer from floods and drought and poverty and illness and torture and hate. I don't want that to happen. It's not selfish at all. But it is selfish from the big book perspective in that I want to play God. I want to be in charge of the world. And if the world, if I were in charge of the world, it would be a better world. But I'm not in charge of the world. I can't be in charge of the world. And my problem is that regardless of my motivation, my wish to be in charge of the world has led me into a life of frustration and resentment and fears. And I'm very grateful for the notion. That's in the prelude to step three, for that notion. I'm grateful for the notion that step three is simply a decision to go on with the rest of the steps. I don't have to stay there at all long. I just have to accept that my purpose is to get rid of the blockage. And I'm grateful for steps 4 through 9 because they got rid of the blockage. And from my perspective and from my understanding of the big book, I'm very grateful in step 4 that it turns out I have only 4 character defects. They're huge. They're so huge. Self-will, the wish to be in charge, dishonesty, which isn't just the lying and cheating and stealing that the big book talks about, although it certainly can be and has been that for me. But it's also not telling the truth when the truth should be told, the people pleasing that I've done all my life, not standing up for what I think is right, not standing up for what my higher power would have me be, not being the person my higher power would have me be. And also, and this is huge for me and I, for many of the people I've worked with, lying to myself about the reality of a situation. I cannot change the past. I can't even have much effect on the present. I certainly have no effect on the future. And yet I live in a world of what I used to live in, a world of woulda, coulda, shoulda. A world in which if only this had not happened, my life would be different. And those of my friends who have suffered horribly in their childhoods or as adults in ways that I have not, they have come to this conclusion that ultimately they are being dishonest in living in the past that was so hurtful instead of saying, I'm living in the present. And the issue is, what can I do about it? Where am I? I'm grateful for understanding that fear is really the childish way of dealing with difficulties. Instead of hiding under the bedclothes, I am facing the fears and figuring out how should I live with this fear if I were living according to truth, love, justice, and beauty, or my higher power, or someone else's higher power. That I'm taking the bedclothes off. I'm shining a flashlight under the bed. I know there's no boogeyman, but there may be a poisonous snake or there may be nothing, but at least I'm an adult dealing with this situation. And this ability to get rid of my fears and outgrow them, as the big book says, become an adult in relation to them, has been huge. And I'm grateful for being able to take the complex relationships in which my instincts have gotten involved, often sexual, but sometimes just sort of instinctive anger, instinctive frustration, and realizing how I've harmed people, sometimes by not standing up for what's right, sometimes by engaging in relationships which are in which they have hurt me and I've accepted that hurt rather than saying this is wrong, or in which I've done the same 5 minutes, I've done the same thing to them. Okay, I don't have much time left. I'm grateful for the rest of those 4 through 9 in which I've been able to make the amends. I'm grateful in step, and I could go into detail, but I won't. I'm grateful in step 10 for understanding finally that step 10 is in fact what I did in 4 through 9, but in recovery, because guaranteed by the end of step 9, if I've abstained from as much as I honestly know I have to abstain from, I will no longer want to return. To keep that, I have to keep cleaning the house that keeps getting scattered with debris as life goes on. And understanding that step 10 is not just apologizing for what I just did, but going to the heart of what's going on in my life. That was the other reason I relapsed over those 7 years. Instead of, I'm sorry to my kids that I yelled, I say, okay, what's really going on in my life? Oh, my in-laws are sick. My wife is spending a lot of time with them. I love them. I don't want them to suffer. What's going on in the world is terrible. So I yell at my kids. That's what step 4 through 9 taught me, that what's really going on in my life. And that's what step 10, I now understood step 10 is about. I'm grateful for the difference between step 10 and step 11. That in step 11 at night, I'm reviewing the day I just did. I'm living a day at a time. How did I do today? What am I going to do tomorrow? Whereas in step 10, I'm reviewing my entire life, what's going on completely in this life. And above all, I'm grateful for step 12. This notion, well, I have a friend, one of my idols in this fellowship, who says, people always say they want what I have, but they're not willing to do the work I do to keep what I have. And I've taken that as a real lesson. I remember when we used to read the big book, we got the chapter Working with Others, you know, when I first joined, and they would say, it may mean the jangling of the telephone in your home at all hours. You may have to go to jails and, you know, bail people out. And I would say, oh, we don't have to do that. We have the telephone, you know, and I would enter into all the, I would phone people. We talked for hours. But the whole concept is that I'm giving of my time to help someone else and as much as I can. And I have gone to jails. Well, I've got jail. I've gone to psychiatric wards. I've gone to hospitals to carry the message. This whole notion of carrying the message is something I must do for myself. It is step 12 is one of those recovery steps. Half measures avail us nothing. Neither do 11 twelfths. I must carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps to those who still suffer. You know, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to the compulsive eater who still suffers. And why do I, so I don't spend a lot of time with people who've already recovered. I spend time with people who haven't recovered because those are the people who need to hear the message. And I'm very grateful for the notion that no one should be dependent upon me for their recovery, but I'm available to help them understand how to recover. And it's up to them to recover. I don't get enmeshed with them. I'm just there to help them work the steps. And once they recover, their job is to help other people, not talk to me. And I'm very grateful for that notion. I'm very grateful for being able to remind myself every time I tell my story, including today. And I'm very grateful for the opportunity today. I'm grateful of the ability to remind myself how horrible it was over 29 years ago and back beyond the time I first joined. Was it 37 years ago, 36 years ago? Because if I didn't remind myself of how bad it was, I would be so complacent. Because right now it's easy. Someone brings out ice cream or a cake, or they bring out French fries or something like that. I look at it, I don't want it. And it'd be so easy just to say, well, what do I need OA for? I just don't want it anymore. But I remember how bad it was. I remember scraping the jar of the peanut butter. I remember scraping the gallon tub of ice cream. I remember those things. I remember how big I was and how unable I was to walk and be active. And telling my story and telling it in the way that it makes sense to me and it makes sense to someone else is one of the greatest joys of my life. I'm very grateful for the opportunity of sharing, and I want to thank you. Thanks.